Voices from the Valley on Park Radio. Where the lives of the people that call the Bow Valley home come to life.
Hi, and welcome to Voices from the Valley, brought to you by Banff Heritage Tourism. I'm Alan Buckingham. This week we continue our celebration of the Park Warden Centennial with retired Park Warden Byron Irons. Joining me today to talk about Byron is Kamara Miller. Kamara recently called Byron at his home in the Curve Lake First Nation in Ontario to talk to him about what it was like for him as a Park Warden. Thanks for joining me today, Kamara.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about Byron.
He started working with Parks on November 1st, 1971, and I think I'll just let him tell us about his early life and essentially his intended future.
Well, I'm from Curve Lake First Nation, which is an Ojibwe First Nation just north of Peterborough, Ontario, about 20 minutes, and a beautiful First Nation in the heart of the Kawartha Lakes, and that's where I am now, in happy retirement. Although I go back to the West every year, I plan to do my final days here. So that's kind of my life now. It's I live here in the winter, or in summer, sorry. And I moved back to Invermere in the beautiful Columbia Valley in the wintertime.
And how did you get a start at Parks Canada?
Well, like many people, just little decisions here and there influenced by, you know, who he met and who he knew, and that just led him to join Parks.
I was working for the Ontario Department of Lands and Forests. They're called the Ministry of Natural Resources here in Ontario. And I had heard about this park going in just near where I was working at the time, which is Manitouwadge, Ontario. I was working for a small deputy chief ranger station there. So I got a call one day from a person who actually was from our First Nation here, and saying that that there was a national park being developed and near where I was located, and would I be interested in working for national parks? So I said, sure. And she said, well, the interview is such and such a date, and come on down. And so I went down there, and they called me and said, you can start such and such a date. So on a Friday, I left the Ontario Department of Lands and Forests, and on Monday, I was working for Parks Canada.
So was that the way Byron had seen his life taking shape?
Not necessarily, because there wasn't a warden in Pakasaw National Park.
Although I knew of national parks at the time, I really didn't know the structure or anything about national parks, their organization and stuff, until I joined. I essentially became the first national park warden in Pakasaw National Park. A year after I started, I started out as a patrolman looking after six other Aboriginal recruits from Pickmobert and Pickheron, which are two local First Nations there in northern Ontario. But like I say, I never really had it in my head, okay, one day I woke up and said, oh, I'm going to be a park warden. It just sort of evolved into a career path for me.
And so how did Byron get out west?
He went working for the Ontario Department of Lands and Forests on the Friday and was working for Parks on Monday, and there was no time to rest. Before we find out how he came out west, we need to find out how he even got on the plane after the orientation with his new staff.
What I did was I worked on the Monday morning. So the first job that I'd done in that time, Pakasaw National Park was a very brand new park. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even what they call gazetted yet. And the staff was only the superintendent and myself, which is kind of unique in itself. And he said to me, he says, Byron, you're working for the national parks now, and we've hired these other six guys. Would you take these papers, get your briefcase, he had a briefcase, and he provided me the car, and he says, you go and sign these guys up and sign them on a dotted line. And so I did. I went to the various reses, hunted these guys up. And I first time I've met these guys. And a week later, we're flying out for an orientation session to Riding Mountain National Park for 6 weeks. So it was quite a quite a good orientation session. They parked me up with a fellow by the name of Al Clapp and another old fellow by the name of Trigger Paulson. And they're, you know, veterans of the Warden Service, and they showed me a lot of the ropes. So we were there for 6 weeks, and we had gotten a bunch of money to fly there and fly back. In those days, there was, you know, no, I guess, suppose there would be credit cards, but there's no debit cards, that kind of thing. So if you had cash, a bunch of cash, you'd just call the airlines and said, I'll be there, and you'd pay your cash. But what had happened was the fellas had spent all our money. So there we were in Manitoba, and it was getting on near Christmas, and the guys had no money to get home to Thunder Bay. We flew out of Thunder Bay. So what I did was I posed my problem to Trigger, and he says, Byron, he says, you better call your park. Tell him the situation here. Try and get you guys home. I was okay. I had my money. So I called back to Pukkasaw National Park to a chief park where they had since hired a chief park warden there, and I told him my predicament. That's how I met my first chief park warden over the phone, and telling him my predicament that I've got six guys here who had spent all their money and we couldn't get back to the park. So he was from an established park, and he managed to ruffle up, and I can't remember how they got that money to the park, but we got back from Riding Mountain, flew into Thunder Bay, and it was Christmas time, so I lent all my money to those guys. I had 7 cents in my pocket, and I bought a train ticket and jumped on a train from Thunder Bay to Marathon, and I arrived in Marathon with 7 cents in my pocket, and I had stayed at the Everest Hotel, which was called the Never Rest Hotel in those days. So they wouldn't let me, you know, who are you, and all this sort of thing. So the superintendent had to come down and kind of jump in and say, give this guy a room and till he has to go to the bank the next day. So that's kind of a shaky start to all this. But we finally kind of got the thing rolling there in Pukkasaw, and I spent essentially 3 years there. Three great years, and Pukkasaw is a little over 740 square miles, and takes in about 50 miles of Lake Superior coastline. It's a beautiful, rugged, isolated piece of ecosystem, and it was beautiful.
And he was there for a little bit until he came out west.
In the meantime, I had gotten married, so decided that I needed a taste of an established park. So there was a guy who was interested in moving from Kootenai National Park, and I was interested in moving, and we just switched. I went to Kootenai National Park in the west, first time I've been in the west, and he moved to Pukkasaw National Park, and he gave me a bit of an orientation when I got there for a week or two, and I went to live at Kootenai Crossing with my young wife, first time she'd been anywhere, and we had one young daughter, and she had two kids in her 18th year, so she did a lot of growing up there, and we were together 17 years and raised our family in Kootenai, and so that was essentially my transition from Pukkasaw to Kootenai, where I finished up my career. And I remember leaving Northern Ontario in the old Fahrenheit days. It was minus 37 Fahrenheit when I left Marathon. You know, when I arrived in Radium Hot Springs, it was plus 42. There was a Chinook blowing in. On February 4th, 1974, I arrived in Radium Hot Springs. A little bit of a change. I'd heard about Chinooks, and I thought, well, this is gorgeous here. This is beautiful. So in some respects, leaving an established situation in the east and going to somewhere I wasn't really all that familiar with, and kind of a new spot, well, that was the temperatures were certainly welcome there.
Yeah, that is a different way to get to the Rocky Mountains.
Yeah, and from there he ran the station in Kootenai Crossing, and there he did everything from fire to law enforcement to wildlife management to backcountry patrol.
Wow. We got to take a bit of a break here, but when we get back, we'll hear some more about Byron Iron's time as a park warden.
Voices from the Valley will be right back. Welcome back to Voices from the Valley.
Hi, and welcome back to Voices from the Valley, brought to you by Banff Heritage Tourism. I'm Alan Buckingham. This week, we're talking with Kamara Miller about retired park warden Byron Irons. Now, I've heard that Byron spent some time as a fire warden. How did that come about?
Well, he's always been interested in fire management.
I did some time working on fires in the province, so it was exciting. I really liked the work, and it was hard work, but I really liked it. So I decided that's what I wanted to do, and I just kind of kept chipping away. And national parks, I suppose we became a little bit more professional, and we ended up being still a small organization in terms of resources and that sort of thing. But we actually got pretty good, and the guys are really doing a fine job. And not only on the fire operations end, putting out fires, but also in the fire ecology. I would say national parks are front and center of a lot of the ecosystem restoration work that goes on in national parks. And I wouldn't say bar none, but the boys are right up there.
And what was that job like for him when he got started with it?
He was starting after a severe burn, so he had a lot of stuff and gear in front of him to organize.
Well, and when we first started in Kootenai, at that time, I was only responsible for Kootenai. And they had just had a fire in 1968, I believe. It was the Vermilion Pass fire, which was a big fire, and it shook up all the park managers around that time. So when I arrived there in 1974, there was incredible amounts of fire gear around. It was you just sort of had to put all this stuff together. There was no kidding. There was fire pumps in every nook and cranny in that park. And Kootenai's 500 or so square miles, and the number of pumps and fire gear after the Vermilion fire was incredible. So we had to kind of have some kind of a plan to kind of streamline all that stuff, and like I say, it was an evolution of we also had fire towers. We got rid of the fire towers, and we ended up flying loaded patrols with the fire crews. The fire crews became a rappel crews. Guys, we first started out with contract rappel crews. Then we ended up with our own rappel crews, and the guys got really good. So over the years, there was a real good sense of professionalism. And when there was the system kind of changed, Kootenai, Yoho, and the north end of Lake Louise to Jasper boundary became its own field unit. So there was only three administrative units left there. So we had to take up the challenge of putting basically three fire equipment and fire operations in three parks. So that was a big job. Not only did we have Kootenai, but we had Yoho and the north end of Banff at the Saskatchewan Crossing as well. So that's how I finished up there. I was a fire operations warden for that field unit. So it was something that was for me in terms of my career, it was good. You know, you're too busy to be thinking about anything else other than trying to do a good job and putting all this stuff together. We had three town sites to look after, plus in number of bungalow camps and that sort of thing to make sure that these things didn't burn down. So the responsibility was good responsibility, and we managed to put together a pretty good system in dealing with that.
Now, as a fire warden, Byron must have done some stuff that others would find a little extraordinary.
Yeah, and I asked him about one in particular that even for him was a pretty scary story and involved an out-of-control helicopter.
The one that kind of sticks out is we had this small little fire near Crooks Meadow just south of Kootenai Crossing, and this friend of mine had moved from the warden service, and a few years before, he left the warden service, and he took up his pilot's license, and he was working for us and on this fire. So we were long-lining some stuff in, and I was underneath the machine, and we were long-lining some fuel for the fire pumps. And so I knew there was something wrong. The machine quit, and I had my orange coveralls. Guys just tease me about having my orange coveralls on, or my yellow coveralls on all the time. And I can be only described as being fairly round. So I knew I had to get out from underneath this machine. So I, even though I'm round, I'm fast. So I scooted across the meadow, and the machine kind of crashed behind me. So I looked back, and the machine, it didn't scatter, like there was no rotor scattering all over, otherwise I'd be all over. The landing gear, the struts and stuff were all smashed, and the front end of the thing was smashed, and there was a lot of damage sustained on the machine. So I went over, and after the rotor stopped, I went over to this friend of mine, and he got out, and he started saying, "We made it! We made it!" So I went over and gave him a big hug, and he kind of looked at me, and I'm sure me giving him that hug scared him more than the actual crash itself. And my retirement, he presented me the very tip of the very tip of the rotor, the main rotor, which is now sitting proudly on my mantle here.
That seems to me Byron's had a pretty great career. Did he mention anything that he was proud of?
Modestly, safety was what he was most proud of.
After all these years and, you know, working fires and working with dangerous equipment like helicopters and chainsaws, and I really didn't hurt anybody. I really didn't kill anybody. To me, that was one of my own personal achievements. And we did have some chainsaw accidents, but nothing too serious. And when I look back on that, I mean, it is kind of an amazing thing when we're in this evolution of fire operations.
And what would you say was his favorite part of the job?
He had to say his toys.
Well, I really liked the toys. I really liked the, you know, there's, we all had the, we had the best machines, we had helicopters, we had fire pumps and all kinds of fire gear that, I loved working with that stuff. And I loved having it prepared. I loved putting it together and putting it in good strategic locations, make sure that the fire crews and the trail crews knew where they were, how to use it, and that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed that part.
And is Byron going to be able to make it out to Banff for the centennial?
Unfortunately, he won't be able to make it out, but he did leave a message for his friends and wardens out here.
I would just like to wish all my colleagues, past and present, happy 100th anniversary, even though we have, there have been changes and there always will be changes, working for national parks is an honorable occupation, and the land is still requires wide stewardship, and in spite of some changes in organization, that job remains to be done.
Well, thanks, Kamara, for talking about Byron with me today.
My pleasure.
If you'd like to find out more about Canadian Park Wardens, you can visit them online at parkwardens.ca. To find out more about Banff Heritage Tourism, you can visit them at banffheritagetourism.com. Voices from the Valley can be heard every week at this time on Park Radio. If you'd like to comment what you heard on the show, send us an email to feedback@parkradio.ca or call our feedback line at 403-762-1536. Thanks for listening. Make sure you tune in next week to hear from some more Voices from the Valley.
Voices from the Valley. Only on Park Radio 101.1 FM.